RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Welcome to the Wednesday, February 6th edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and up here on this week's edition of the show, we're going to take a look back at what happened last Saturday in Brazil at UFC Fortaleza, of course, headlined by Marlon Moraes submitting Rafael Sunsal, of course, in the rematch. So we'll talk about everything that happened on that fight card. Then you're going to hear my conversations with Henry Corrales, Eddie Cha, and Logan Storley. Of course, Henry Corrales coming off that win against Aaron Pico. Eddie Cha, the head striking coach for Henry Corrales, of course, has been Corrales' longtime coach. And, of course, Eddie went to the MMA lab, and Henry followed him there. So we'll talk to Eddie about that. Also talk a little bit about the Korean Zombie, who's been training at the MMA lab. And then the final conversation you're going to hear is with Logan Storley, of course, going to be a part of that Bellator card next Friday night at the Mohegan Sun. Of course, I will be in Connecticut next week for Bellator 215 and 216. I'll get there on Thursday. I will have a podcast on Friday of next week already scheduled. To join me is ABC president Mike Mazzulli to talk about the regulatory side of MMA, as there are some things going on with that. Also, we'll talk to Tyson Chartier, of course, coach of Rob Font and Tyson Fourier, also the head of Top Game Management, and also going to have Nolan King, one of the MMA reporter out there that I follow a lot on social media to find out some fight booking. So that's all what I've got locked in so far on next week's edition of the podcast. But at the end of this week's show, we'll talk about this weekend's MMA. Of course, we got UFC 234 on Saturday night here in the United States. Of course, that'll be Sunday morning in Australia. And also, we'll talk about Bellator's event on Saturday at Bellator Newcastle. Give you a little some tidbits about that event. Daniel, UFC Fortaleza this past weekend was on ESPN Plus. It was the first card on ESPN Plus I did not watch live. This one I watched live, and it was such an enjoyable experience. And the best way I would describe it is, you know, during the Fox era on the UFC, to me it was about filling up time, and these cards just they just dragged on. But as I was watching that fight card on Saturday night, I felt like I was watching, like I was watching the Magic play, or I was watching the Knowles play, or I was watching a football game, an NHL game, where it was, we know you are here to watch a sporting event. You are not here to listen to us talk. And it seemed to me that I guess the way they formatted that show was the prelims was the first half. The transition from the prelims to the main card with the main card opening was halftime, and then the main card was the second half. It was such a great pacing of the event, a very enjoyable experience. Kudos to ESPN. Kudos to the UFC for that pacing. And, boy, I hope some other MMA organizations kind of look at what ESPN's doing.
Yeah, man. I tell you what, this move to ESPN, there is a lot of no-brainer things ESPN is doing with these broadcasts that is really making watching the UFC a more enjoyable experience. I mean, I tell you what, I did not anticipate that this weekend, Jason, I would have had more fun watching UFC Fortaleza than watching the Super Bowl. But I tell you what, Fortaleza was a better viewing experience than that 3:13 slugfest. I absolutely loved the main card on ESPN+, and in addition to the pacing, which is, to me, something they absolutely had to do, especially when it's on a streaming platform. Even the prelims on ESPN, which is something where, honestly, they have a tight window, so I think they're forced to go boom, boom, boom. That was paced well. I guess the last thing to look at is when they go full main card on ESPN to see what the pacing is like there. But in addition to that pacing, Jason, it's also the early start times for the fight nights. It's just it was great, man. I mean, this card ended, and there was still time in the day for plenty of activities. And I would say UFC Fortaleza may not have been the biggest fight night card in terms of name value up top, but overall, I thought it was a real positive night for the UFC.
Yeah, man. And the one thing I had heard heading into this ESPN deal was that they were a big believer in not having, you know, cards go all night. And, you know, we've seen it, you know, the Nashville car, which is next month, is going to have an 8 p.m. Eastern time start. The Philly car is going to have a 7 p.m. Eastern time start. So I think right now, as you look at this, it's just an enjoyable experience to sit on your couch and watch these fights. But also the fact of, you know, they're not, you know, basically, you know, to me, they're just not trying to fill up time. But it was a very enjoyable fight card. You know, I watched the prelims on my tablet and then switched over to the TV with the main card. And, you know, the stream quality was very solid. Had a couple of, you know, hiccups. But, you know, yeah, that's something you expect when you're talking about a live stream event. But, you know, main card had a lot of stoppages. Marlon Moraes, the submission win there in the first round against Rafael Assuncao. Man, Jose Aldo, here's the way I would describe this one, and let me see if you feel the same way. To me, Renato Moicano showed him way too much respect in the first round, and I think that's a big reason of why Jose Aldo ended up in the stoppage in the second round. Not to say should not take anything away from Jose Aldo, but Renato Moicano, that first round, it seemed like he was starstruck.
Oh, yeah. It felt like Jose Aldo was confident. I mean, it was comfortable. He allowed him to get comfortable, which is just not what you want to do. When you go back and you see fighters have success against Aldo, it comes down to making him uncomfortable and pushing the pace and kind of jumping into the dragon's den, because Aldo built this reputation of being this, like, insane fighter, this guy who will take you out in seconds. And if you don't respect that, and if you still have good striking defense, mind you, you can't just not respect it and go in there with bad striking defense. You're going to end up knocked out. But it seems like the key to beating him is being a lot more aggressive and not getting in your head, because he kind of has this mystique where you beat yourself before you even get in the cage. And yeah, it was a conservative approach. And that first round, it wasn't necessarily vintage Aldo, but it wasn't that second round where it was vintage Aldo. It was, wow, is this guy really going to retire at the end of the year, Aldo? Because Moicano honestly probably didn't fight as well as he could have given what we've seen prior to this fight against Aldo, but he's still one of the toughest fighters in 145 pounds, and it's a bit of a shame with Aldo. I mean, this guy is absolutely a top three featherweight today, a challenger, and the fact that he might retire is a bit worrisome, because when you see the finish in the second round here, how could you not watch that and think, man, the old Aldo's back?
Here's the craziness about Jose Aldo. He's only 32 years old.
That's nuts. I feel like he was 34 3 years ago. Is he aging in reverse is my big question. That's crazy. The one thing is, a lot of these fighters, specifically from Brazil, man, they fight so hard and they train so hard. They age so fast. I mean, It's nuts, but I think you really got to look at, like, in terms of the age of fighters, is like how long they've been in the UFC or WEC, like that type of high level stage. I mean, if you've been a part, I mean, I remember he was so young. I need to check how old he was. But when we first saw him in the WEC, when he was going out there like knocking Cub Swanson out with flying knees, I mean, it was 2008. So Aldo, despite only being 32, which is an absolute shocker, I mean, he has been on this big-time stage fighting and training for big-time fights for literally 11 years.
And, you know, and now the featherweight division, the top of that division is so interesting. I tweeted after the fight was over, how about Jose Aldo versus Brian Ortega? I almost feel like, and we'll see what happens with Max Holloway. You know, obviously, he's clearly trying to, you know, set himself up potentially for a Conor McGregor fight, even though I don't think that's going to happen to him. But, you know, the UFC could kind of do a little bit of a mini tournament here. When you look at, depending on what happens with Max Holloway, you've got Jose Aldo, Brian Ortega. You look at Alexander Volkanovski, Frankie Edgar. I don't want to see Jose Aldo, Frankie Edgar. We've seen that now two times. That a trilogy fight between them doesn't interest me at all. But man, I think that if you're looking at a title matchup, if Max Holloway is defending the featherweight title against somebody, and let's just say it's not Conor McGregor, and I don't think that's a likelihood, I would have to think it's either Volkanovski or Frankie Edgar. My guess is that Frankie Edgar would get it.
Yeah, I think it would. And then What would you do with the other part of the tournament? Would you put Volkanovski in this tournament?
Oh, yeah. I think if you slot him,
well, if you give Edgar the title shot.
Well, I mean, you look at, you've got four clear top contenders at 145 pounds. You know, those four guys that I mentioned. I mean, and then, you know, right after that, you got Renato Moicano. I mean, maybe if you want, maybe you want to do a fun fight with Jose Aldo. And I know he went on social media saying, hey, man, I hope we can run this one back before you retire. Cub Swanson.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that would be great. I think when you're looking at Aldo, you want to match him up against guys you think are going to stand and trade with him. You know, that's why I think there's no interest, or I don't have a lot of interest in watching him fight Volkanovski from a promoter perspective. But that's also a fight that likely is important because – it would allow Alexander Volkanovski, if he's absolutely championship bound, like Aldo is a perfect platform in the featherweight division if you want to climb up and get that championship opportunity. I mean, at this point, a win over Aldo, no matter who you are, puts you as the top contender for the featherweight title. So I could see Aldo Swanson for sure, Jason, but usually when we talk about fights that should be made, it's always the first suggestion that it's the no-brainer deal. And the one that's got to be made, I think, is Aldo versus Ortega. I mean, Ortega needs another fight coming off his last one. And Aldo versus Ortega, you know, has exciting fight written all over it. It's got a little sprinkle of the Joe Silva special because Ortega, despite challenging for the title, is still a guy who's a new face in the UFC versus an old guard. So Brian Ortega and Aldo, sign me up, Jason. I am 100% down for that fight.
Yeah, I love that fight. We got to mention Marlon Moraes going out there and get the submission win over Rafael Sunsal. Sunsal, after the fact, saying, you know what, maybe I should have listened to my team and waited for a title matchup, which God knows when that could potentially be for a 135-pound fighter. But Marlon Moraes, man, this guy's just been on an absolute tear. After the fact comes out, he's only got one fight left on his deal. I mean, to me, he is the clear number one contender at 135 pounds. You can't take that away from him. But, you know, it's you know who's in the weirdest position here, Daniel?
Henry Cejudo?
No.
Oh, who?
Ali Abdelaziz. Because he represents Henry Cejudo and Marlon Moraes.
Wow.
That's, I mean, like, you know, and look, and whatever your thoughts are of Ali Abdelaziz are, I mean, look, just from a business side, like, if you got to think there's going to be people around Ali that says, hey, let us handle this. You kind of take a back seat on this one because he's really in a no-win situation with Cejudo and Moraes right now. Because, I mean, look, I think it's, to me, I think it's very clear the UFC would like to do Cejudo Dillashaw next. I just say, you know, and it's becoming more and more clear the UFC is not interested in being in the flyweight business. Henry Cejudo mentioned it last week in Brazil that Dustin Ortiz has been released from the UFC, and then Ortiz was removed from the UFC rankings this week. So that's pretty much tells you that he has been released by the UFC. Also, Chad Mendes has been eliminated from the UFC rankings. Of course, it was reported that he basically had let people know he was going to retire after that loss to Volkanovski. But Marlon Moraes, he's in a great situation. Obviously, with only one fight left on his deal, and you know he says he wants to get a new contract, which, look, if his next fight's a title fight, the UFC's not going to let him go into that fight with only one fight left on his deal. So he will get a new UFC deal. But to me, if I'm the matchmaker, Daniel, I would do Cejudo Benavidez as my last flyweight fight, and then I do Moraes versus Dillashaw, and hell, the two winners of those fights, they face each other after that.
Exactly. That's what I would do too, Jason. It's a weird situation. With this win over Rafael Sunsal, which, I mean, this was just like papitas for Moraes, man. He went out there, hit him with a couple rights, knocked him down, locked on a guillotine choke, got the win over, like, the uncrowned number two runner-up in the bantamweight division for 10 years, Rafael Sunsal, a guy who beat Marlon Moraes. Marlon Moraes, God, lately he has looked like a Terminator robot. I mean, he very well could be the best bantamweight in the world today. He might go in there against Dillashaw and beat him. And the thing is, I would go Cejudo Benavidez. I think that's an interesting fight. And it's a funny thing because, like, two things can be true. Marlon Moraes is absolutely the number one contender in the bantamweight division, but the fighter who deserves the next opportunity against TJ Dillashaw is Henry Cejudo, given that he beat him. Those two things, I believe, are true, but I like the solution you provided with Henry Cejudo versus Benavidez. I really want to see that fight. I really want to see if the flyweight division's going off. I feel like that's the perfect fight to end the division on. And Dillashaw Moraes, that's a great fight. Now, the problem is, or maybe it's not a big problem, it's only going to be a big problem for Ali Abdelaziz, Jason. But Amaro Moraes beats TJ Dillashaw, and Henry Cejudo beats Joseph Benavidez. What position does that put Ali in?
He's mentioned that already. He says, look, I'll just take a back seat. You know, I mean, that's what happens when and Ali represents a lot of top UFC fighters. You're going to find yourself in that position at some point. I know Jason House of Iridium Sports has found himself in that point where he's had fighters end up fighting each other. First round management, Malkin, Abraham, Kawa have put themselves in that situation. So it does happen. Now, you know, I'm a stat guy. To me, this is one of the craziest stats right now in MMA and regarding Marlon Moraes. He started his career 5-4-1. He's now 17-1 in his last 18 fights.
That is one hell of a stat. That's something I didn't even put together ever.
I mean, think about that. You got to imagine when he's 5-4-1 after losing on November 18, 2011, you would think, and that was after losing back-to-back fights, that some people might have looked at him and said, man, maybe this isn't for you. But I think it also just shows that even if your career gets off to a rocky start, it doesn't mean it's over. It means you still got an opportunity to go out there and prove something. And, man, just this run he's been on, I mean, they only lost, back in 2017 against Rafael Sunsal, very close split decision loss. But man, he's just this run he has been on. I mean, you forget that, you know, he was on the inaugural World Series of Fighting show where he beat Miguel Torres. And then, of course, this run he's been on the UFC. I mean, look, the John Dodson fight was not a fun fight. But, you know, since then, the knockout against Aljamain, the knockout against Rivera, and now this submission win against Rafael Sunsal, he has to, if we're talking deserving is what should happen with the UFC title, he deserves the next title shot. But I think, unfortunately, it's going to be Henry Cejudo.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I have a weird feeling it's going to be Cejudo Benavidez.
But I would say this, man. Cejudo was on the post-fight show on ESPN Plus, and, I tell you what, Henry's doing a great job of selling himself. I like what he's doing. I mean, it's, he did mention that doesn't want to return to, like, he mentioned, it was either June, July, or July, August. And I was thinking about it. In my scenario, what if you had him return, him versus Benavidez as the main event and Dillashaw Moraes as a co-main event? And it ultimately gives the UFC and make that a pay-per-view. And basically, let's see if Henry Cejudo can be a guy who can draw on pay-per-view.
I think that's a hell of a card. You know, I think that's not going to do a huge buy rate, but it might do halfway decent.
What if it draws 250,000 buys? I think that'd be a solid performance for a flyweight champion.
100%, yeah. Cejudo comes across like a guy who's going to own this ESPN deal. I mean, he has looked good on all these talk shows. And he has got the talent level to back it up. I think he's absolutely the guy you got to look at to become the next superstar in the UFC when it comes to drawing ability. So, I mean,
you know what was a popular tweet on Saturday night about star ability, right?
What was that?
Johnny Walker.
Oh, no question. I mean, this guy also literally got a win in 15 seconds and almost got a loss. Like, this dude knocked out Justin Ledet.
Before he explained himself, and I watched that replay 4 or 5 times, I said, he was going to kick him in the stomach. It's just the way Ledet moved. You know, obviously he didn't anticipate that, but I was like, oh, he wasn't going for his head. The target area was the stomach, but still, man,
don't kick a guy in the stomach when you got him knocked out in 15 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll say this. I mean, there are definitely things you think, hey, this guy could be, star driven, speaks English. So that helps out with the United States audience. Just, you know, great personality. You know, you love everything you see about him. But I also, like, let's not rush him. Like, I saw some people, like, these fancy matchmaking. I'm like, whoa. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit here. Let's let this guy develop.
Yeah, let's not book Johnny Walker versus John Jones quite yet. Look, the guy's got a great name. Great personality. Dude's doing all kinds of stuff post-fight.
But if he's going to fight John Jones, if that is the target, we're talking 2 years from now.
Here's the problem. He fights a light heavyweight. That's the problem.
Here's my thing about him, and it's an unknown. What happens when he maybe has to go up against, let's say, Corey Anderson?
I don't think he's going to go great, to be honest with you.
I mean, look to me. If I'm Sean Shelby, I am just booking Johnny Walker against strikers.
Yeah, don't expose this guy until push comes to shove. Because in the UFC light heavyweight division, there is not a whole lot of interesting light heavyweights. Johnny Walker is an interesting light heavyweight. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the matchmaker's job to protect this guy as much as he realistically can. I mean, it's all about upping your game, upping the competition. But Johnny Walker should not be in the cage with Corey Anderson in the next 5 years. Like, do not put him against Corey Anderson. Do not put him against a guy who's only a wrestler. But yeah, Jason. Again, this main card was the first fight, Sosa and Frota, not a finish, but everything else, man, it was just super enjoyable. Guys moving up in the ranks, or a guy in Johnny Walker. I mean, if you're watching him for the first time, you just think, wow, this guy's got so much star potential.
Oh, man, it was just a quick knockout. Damian Maia goes out there and does what Damian Maia does. Submission win, not even taking a strike, essentially. Charles Oliveira has to weather a little adversity there. Man, first off, kudos to the referee, Varel, for taking the point. Literally, he got poked in both eyes at the same time. So kudos to him. I did think it was it could have been stopped a little sooner, but especially when Tamor was at his back against Oliveira and he's just weighing punches. Livia Souza against Sarah Froto looked like a small strawweight going up against a small bantamweight.
Yeah, dude, that's definitely what happens when a fighter misses weight by like 7 pounds at 115, Jason. That's like 7 pounds divided by 115 is like 6.1%. All right, 6.1% extra body weight. I mean, that's like, I don't even know. That's like adding 14 pounds at 205 or something like that. I mean, it's nuts.
Here's the thing. Like, if you are managing Liviana Souza, you need to get more than 20%.
No, didn't she get 40%?
I don't recall. I mean, look, the negotiations start for me to take the fight at 50%.
Absolutely. You might be right. I think she was – I know for sure Frodo, I think, was fine 40%. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Frodo. Did she get released?
I think so. I think you missed weight by 7 pounds at 115. You're out of here. If you aren't a commodity, you're out of here. I mean, come on. I mean, that's nuts. That's absolutely nuts. Even 7 pounds in any weight class, that's questionable. But in the weight class where each pound matters the most, oh, get out of here. I mean, don't get me wrong. The problem is Sarah Froda is a pretty entertaining fighter. Like, good striker, good third round for her. I have no idea how the judges gave her the damn fight. I mean, she lost the first two rounds, plain and simple. One of the judges gave her the fight.
Yeah, and by the way, she was fine 40%. Here's the other thing about Sarah Frodo. Mm-hmm. I've seen some bad MMA tattoos.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she might be the worst. Might be the worst.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, you're probably right. It's been a while since I've seen a UFC tattoos. But,
Oh, man, that was bad. That was some bad tattoos.
I know, man.
You know, in the prelims, Marcus Perez, nice technical submission win over Anthony Hernandez. The heavyweights, Rosenstruck, kind of interesting, kind of see how he develops. Obviously, kickboxer, how Giro Bini, you have to imagine he gets released. Upset with Bill Witthoff losing a split decision. Tiago Alves gets a split decision, or Max Griffin. I didn't think Tiago, close fight, but I had it for Max Griffin. Anything else stick out to you about the prelims?
Sayed Nurmagomedov against Fedorovs. Dude just, spinning back kick, put down Ramos. That was a good one. That flyweight fight you mentioned, Bibolatov and Bonturin, I guess, that was just a great fight. If you guys missed out the prelims, I would watch that one. And honestly, I really enjoy watching Alves Griffin. I guess the only thing I'd end on is, you know, Charles Oliveira, we talked about him. He gets the win. This guy holds the most submission victories. My question to you, Jason, I don't even think the UFC Hall of Fame matters that much, but does Charles Oliveira, when it's all said and done, make the UFC Hall of Fame?
This is the thing. To me, Hall of Fame is about the greats.
Yeah.
And, man, you know, does he ever contend for a UFC title? I think that's got to be the question.
It's true. It is true, but the accomplishment of most history is pretty good.
But here's the thing. Sometimes I think we live in the moment, and Super Bowl is a great example of this.
Yeah.
Of people calling for Julian Edelman to be a potential Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that one's stupid. I mean, Julian Edelman's never been the best. Yeah, I mean, that one's stupid.
He's never made a Pro Bowl.
That's also true.
Like we live in this. I understand what you're saying. Maybe the Hall of Fame is the accomplishment of the submission wins, but I think in terms of his overall career.
Oh yeah.
No, you know, if you want to put him in, you know, based on his accomplishments, I mean, you know, this fake UFC Hall of Fame, because it's not really a Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's true.
To me, it's got to be the greats of the greats. And Charles Oliveira, fun fighter to watch. Is he, time will tell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you're right. Like, he's definitely, if you're just looking at him as a fighter, in terms of, like, competing, it's like, oh, no way. He hasn't been in the title yet. I mean, he hasn't been in that spot. He's almost been there. But, God, we may never see a person break his record when it's all said and done for most submission wins in the UFC. Like, he might. I mean, this dude straight up beat Royce Gracie's record, and Royce Gracie fought three times against bums. You know, you could just go in there and lock on it. And there was, like, no time limit, right? Like, so, I mean, this guy's still going, Oliveira. I mean, he's going to rack up these submissions. I mean, look, he had tamer finish with strikes, and this guy's like a NBA player who, like, boxes out his own teammate to get that rebound and get the triple-double. I mean, he's got him finished, and he just goes for the choke, you know? So, I mean, Oliveira's going to pull up those stats. I mean, he's gonna end his career with a hell of a submission streak.
Oh, yeah, he is. So that is UFC 4 Aleza. Of course, UFC 234 is coming up this weekend. We're going to preview that later on in the show. But coming up right now, you're going to hear my conversations with Henry Corrales, Eddie Shaw, and Logan Storley as Henry talks about his win over Aaron Pico. Eddie, the coach of Henry Corrales, talks about that victory. And then you're going to hear Logan Storley talk about his fight next week at Bellator 215. I am now joined by a man who scored a knockout victory this past Saturday night, Bellator 214, Henry Corrales. Henry, congratulations on the victory, man. Most memorable night of your life?
Thanks, man. It's up there for sure, yeah.
I mean, obviously, by the way, love the post-fight interview. Watching on DAZN, there was no censorship on what you had to say. I just, like you just had this stare, like, hey, man, I'm as you said, I was ready to go in there and die. You know, and obviously a lot has been made about, you know, everything you kind of said about, you know, why the move to Arizona, whatnot. And it made me think about, as you were, I think it was, you were talking on the post-fight show on DAZN, and it made me wonder, where do you think you would be if Eddie Shaw did not get the job at the MMA lab?
I don't know, man. It wasn't looking good for me. You know, I was on a little 3-fight losing streak, taking short notice fights and just not being my best. So probably not in Bellator, but who knows?
I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, as you look back on now, I mean, obviously everything's great right now, but you think about, I mean, and look, I mean, we can look at the three guys you fought. I mean, they're all top of the division. Like, do you think about kind of how you look at the fight game now in comparison to then, how different it could be?
Yeah, you know, it does. You know, I'm just grateful that I'm not in that position no more. You know, I was scratching and clawing to get my way back up to this position. And, you know, I'm glad everything worked out at the MMA lab. Those guys helped me out so much. And yeah, I'm just super grateful, you know, and just keep on grinding, man, just pushing forward.
So when you got back to the locker room and you picked up your phone, how many text messages was there?
Hundreds. Dude, and it was a lot of people that were there in the crowd. They're like a bunch of my buddies, you know, that I grew up with, and they were just fucking everybody. Like, it's super cool winning fights, and, like, that's cool, but, like, the reaction from, like, people that, like, close, like, friends and family, like, that's what really does it for me. That's what really gets me off.
I thought one of the most interesting things you said after his fight there's so many things you could talk about, but I thought the most interesting thing was you talked about, look, I visualize this fight going so many ways, my way, his way, all that. And that's what I found kind of interesting. But as you think, when you visualize it, did you ever think that you would be in that position, the two of you guys just clinched up, you know, kind of not near the fence?
Yeah, I've seen that too. You know, that's a position I always end up in for some reason, especially with dudes always trying to take me down and stuff. I always have that frame up and blocking, and I always pull the head down to start throwing. And yeah, you know, you in the fight game, it's pretty crazy because your mind will take you so many little vision quests during of what could happen, good, bad. But at the end of the day, it's just like, you know, I just train. You know, and just get out of my mind, you know, stop thinking, just get to work.
I know we all want to look at the knockout, but I have to imagine for you, it's more about when Aaron landed that punch. Is that the sequence you've watched more than anything else?
Yeah. And man, that guy's so good. Like I threw a jab and I blocked my own like peripheral vision, and he just shot a perfectly timed uppercut right up the pipe on that dude, and it was just, I didn't see it, you know. So it was just one of those things that, you know, you always hear fighters say like, oh, it's the punches you don't see that kind of rocky, you know. And it just, once I realized like what hit me and that my ass touched the mat, I was like pretty much recovered. And so
did his speed surprise you?
That one did, because I didn't see it, you know what I mean. But other than that, no. I don't really think he landed anything else besides that, you know, maybe a glancing shot or two, but, you know, I think I was landing the bigger shots. Right when we got up, I came up chucking, dude, and I landed a couple heavy shots behind the ear, and it kind of slowed him down a little bit. And then I circled out, just see where my legs were at, and they felt good. So I beelined right back to him and double jab cross and just grab that clinch and start throwing, dude, I was a little pissed off, you know, trying to get it back, you know, and it worked out for me.
It is, you know, one of the things that, and I kind of talked about this on my podcast earlier today. I mean, I know there's a lot of people who will be down on Aaron Pico, but to me, he's the type of guy you want to watch fight because he is willing to put himself in risk. Is that something you, Eddie, you know, John and Benson had kind of talked about the week of the fight of like, look, he's going to put himself in a risk and we just got to take advantage of it?
Yeah, we said that too. But then we were also saying, hey, he's a wrestler and he's going to use his wrestler. He's a wrestler at heart. And so we touched all bases for sure, man. We were so prepared for this one, like just 100% prepared, you know, with what he brings to the table. And what I brought to the table through my preparations for this fight, and we were locked and loaded, ready to go, man.
Well, when we talked a couple of weeks ago, we talked about, you know, kind of that bucket list of the forum and what that means for you, and this is becoming a yearly routine for you. Like, as you know, as you finish the fight, referee calls it off. Do you remember kind of standing there, what was going through your mind?
Yeah, for me, I was like, I want to get the fuck out of this cage. I was like, I just want to go celebrate, you know what I mean? And, you know, there's a lot of familiar faces in the crowd for both sides. You know, we got mutual people that know each other and stuff. So I didn't want to celebrate in the cage or do anything, you know what I mean? I had respect for him because, you know, that was a nasty KO, you know? So I was just trying to keep it cool and just get out of there. But it kind of took a while and had to do a little interview and stuff, so. Yeah, that's pretty much what was on my mind. And my corner was going crazy. My buddy Drakkar Klaus, he fucking jumped on the cage like they were going to kick him out. Like, who is this guy? He like ran through the crowd, jumped on the cage like he won the fight. He's like, yeah. He's like just going crazy. I mean, I was just sitting there like, dude, hell yeah.
Yeah, I saw a photo of of Drakkar and Brandon Lampert from the Chirp House celebrating in the stands.
Yeah, that was probably right before he jumped on the cage.
But I tweeted about this after the fact. Like, to me, there's two options for you. And I'll get whether you agree with this or not. I said either A, it's a rematch against Patricio for the title, or B, if they're going to do Chandler versus Patricio, you versus AJ McKee, and essentially a number one contenders fight. Is that kind of Are you kind of feeling that one?
That'd be cool too, you know. As long as they pay me, that's all good. But the belt sounds good too, especially because I fought that guy on 12 days notice last time, you know, under some different circumstances. So it'd be cool to get back in there with that guy for sure. And I think it'd be a super exciting fight.
Is there a time range of when you'd like your next fight to take place?
I don't know. I feel good, dude. I feel really good. So we'll see, you know.
I mean, let's just hypothetically say a short notice opportunity comes up to maybe take on, say, Emmanuel Sanchez. I mean, obviously the short notice thing hasn't worked out for you in the past in Bellator, yeah. But it would be one of those things of like, I don't think I could turn that down.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't, dude. I right now I'm like, no, I need camps and this and that. But, dude, these days I train year round, dude. I'm always in the gym, so I'd get in there for sure, probably.
I know by following you on Facebook and IG, you've been celebrating a little bit. Are you back in the gym?
No, not yet. I'm going to have my first workout today, so I wanted to take 72 hours off. And, I'll be back in the gym tonight. I'm in California right now at my mom's place, and then I'm going to drive back. I'm going to drive back today in a little bit, get a little workout in when I get back in the desert over there.
How far of a drive is that?
It's 5 hours.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's nothing, dude. I like the drive, actually. It's a nice little drive to the desert, so it's cool.
Oh, we always talk about what you're reading. So what's in the what are you reading right now?
I'm reading Principles by Ray Dalio. He's like one of the most successful people in the country. So pretty cool book.
So, I mean, you alluded to, hey, I'm trying to get paid here. Are we in contract negotiations at this point?
Well, this was the first fight of my new contract. So I'm going to try to renegotiate.
Yeah, I think you keep putting all those performances there. They're going to be willing to talk.
What's the worst? They're just going to say, what's the worst that could happen? They'll say no. I'm like, all right, whatever.
And, of course, I got to ask you, you know, the next big Bellator event, we've got Page and Daly. I got to imagine that's a fight you're excited to just sit there and watch. How do you see that one playing out?
That's going to be super cool because I don't see those guys, either one of those guys, trying to take it to the ground. So they're going to be see if Daly lands that bomb or if Venom just picks him apart and snipes him. So it's going to be an interesting one for sure.
There's like a 1% chance one of them goes for a takedown.
Yeah, it's pretty low, dude.
I can't see either one of them trying to get... The only way they're going for a takedown is if they get rocked and they're just trying to recover a little bit. That's the only way there's a takedown.
Seriously, for sure.
But we look forward to seeing when your next fight would be. Congratulations on the victory. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you on social media and, of course, those sponsors that help support you during this fight camp.
Sweet, man. Thanks. At Henry Krause MMA on Instagram, that's like my most active platform. And then my sponsors would be Manny at Dreamscapes, Anthony at Help You Save, Brandon at Turf House, and Ron Scholes and team at Lace and Loop. And the rest are on my Instagram.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is the head striking coach for the MMA Lab, of course, also the head coach or coach of Henry Krause. Been with Henry for since he was in California. Eddie, man, I appreciate the time, man. Obviously, it's been a little bit of time since Henry's victory, and I was thinking about two parts of this. Have you ever thought about if you had not gotten the job in Arizona with MMA Lab, kind of where you and Henry would be at right now?
Probably not where he's at right now. So pretty fortunate. That does cross my mind here and there. We've been pretty blessed, you know, the timing of everything, how everything happened, me moving down, him deciding to follow me and stuff like that. It's been truly a blessing. They literally have everything that we were missing was the bodies, the wrestling, the jiu-jitsu, the leadership of Benson Henderson and Coach Crouch. So, yeah, I think everything gelled, everything at the right time, you know.
I mean, as you, I mean, obviously you have been around Henry for a long time. Do you see some difference in him in just how he maybe looks at the game differently now as opposed to, you know, say 2 or 3 or 4 years ago?
Absolutely. I think the skill set was always there. His toughness and everything else was there. But he's grown so much. I think we got to credit Jason House from Irritant Sports with that as well. He's rubbed off on everybody, including myself. Not as much as Henry, but ever since, you know, he's been kind of hanging around him and being mentored by him as well. He reads books. You know, he's reading like a book a week or a book every 2 weeks. I think that's the biggest game changer, his mental aspect to this game. He's always written a diary and a journal of what he wants to accomplish and all these other facets of the game. But the reading part, just the writing, like this whole camp, we were out there. Every time he wakes up, he's getting up, reading in his bed, writes in his journal. Then we go get something to eat, reads again. I was just at his house right now. We got a barbecue set for him, for his house, you know, just as a housewarming gift. But they don't have a TV in his house. You know, so that's probably the first house I've been to that they, you know, nobody watches TV over there. All they do is just literally read. He meditates. You know, this is all he does. So he's pretty dialed in.
Yeah, I've talked to Henry about in the past of various books that he reads, and I do know he's reading a ton of books all the time. I mean, obviously the fight, everyone kind of, you know, and even Henry mentioned it, you know, what kind of pissed him off is, you know, getting hit early on in that fight. But, you know, one of the things about Aaron is, man, you know, he may be one of the most exciting fighters in all MMA because he just goes for it. Is that something that yourself, John Krause, and the whole team there kind of, that was really a big focus point of, look, if he gets you, he's going to go all at it, and this may be our opening?
Not necessarily that aspect. I mean, we always knew Aaron's a stud. You know, this kid's so young. He's a huge prospect. Our game plan was a little different. First, we got to give real hats off to Benson because he was like, I love that fight. And I go, really? I go, I like it, but I don't love it. But it's a guy that, you know, we got to go through anyway. And Benson's like, we're going to get him now. You know, now's the time to get him as opposed to a year or two from now where he's growing and everything else. He's putting everything together. And we kind of agreed upon that. But Benson really believed in that. As far as game planning, we kind of circled towards the power hand. We wanted to circle left. If you watch before all that exchange and all that other stuff, our game plan was to circle out. You know, draw out that 1-2. I felt like he was going to jab us a lot and do all that. We wanted the leg kicks, which they were kind of ready for. But before that big exchange, you know, he slipped his 1-2, slipped it with, the, you know, Henry's right hand. We won a good exchange there. The only thing we told him not to do was to throw a double jab cross or a hook because Pico's timing is so good. And when he threw that double jab and got dropped with that hook uppercut, my mouth just dropped when it felt like everything was in slow motion, like, no. But he recovered great. You know, that's one thing Henry has is a chin on him. He recovered, and, you know, and the rest was history. We started scrapping. and he's, oh, like, another thing was sometimes he pushes his punches, so the whole camp were like, just sling. You know, our keyword was sling. Throw that big right hook, throw the big check hooks, you know, but you got to sling it. Don't try to aim and, you know, push that right hand. Just throw it hard. Just sling it like you know, if you watch his King of the Cage fights, that's how he was dropping everyone with that right hook. So I'm happy he threw that thing.
Were you and the team surprised that Aaron just didn't use his wrestling? I mean, we've seen in his other fights, he hasn't shown his wrestling, but in preparations, did y'all think that, you know, wrestling maybe not be a factor?
We definitely was expecting the wrestling. He worked really hard on it this camp. He's worked hard on it the last four camps. So, I mean, we were a little surprised, but at the same time, everything happened so fast. You know, like, I know Pico's getting a lot of, kind of hate out there that, oh, he should have took him down and just try to pound him out. Yeah, I agree too about that. But at the same time, you know, in the heat of the moment, that uppercut was hard. I mean, most guys would have been pretty much out, you know, and just like his other fights, one shot and they, you know, he's dropped everybody. So it's hard to say in the heat of the moment when someone's that hurt, you know, and Henry wasn't hurt. he might have been hurt, but he recovered super fast. But no one can kind of say, because if he knocked him out and then he pounded him out on his feet, everyone said, you know, Aaron's great and he's the phenom and everything else. He loses. It's just a catch 22. So it's unfortunate for him. I think he's going to be a star in the division here soon, but definitely I think he needs to mix up his wrestling, with especially his type of wrestling, his pedigree.
Would that be your best advice to him, or a fighter that's in his similar situation of like, look, this is mixed martial arts. You gotta use all the tools in the toolbox.
For sure. Just mixing it up. And I think it takes time. He's only has what, 6 fights now. You know, even just showing feints and level changes and stuff like that is going to slow anybody down. And so we were fortunate. He really believes in his striking. And again, Ben and Crouch said that they're like, I think he's just going to try to bang away with Freddie Roach in the corner. And we were fortunate enough. Almost that uppercut that dropped Henry gave us an advantage that he's going to continue to stand with us. Because I think we would have seen that wrestling in the first round for sure.
How much did the Korean Zombie play into the preparations for this one?
Good. It was great to have him. He stayed at Benson's house, and then he stayed at my house for the last 3 weeks. And, you know, he went with us everywhere, and he did the best he could. He's still kind of recovering. I think he's cleared now, but he wanted to get in there, like, every single day. He was doing the wrestling classes with the team and, you know, light sparring towards the end. We were hitting pads every day, but, you know, he wants to get in there so bad. But, yeah, he's definitely got a lot of experience, and him and Henry gets along well. And he asked Henry if he can go with him. And so we all went together, me, him, and Benson drove up to Cali. So it was a great week, really great week.
Is right now you just sitting back saying, man, has the preparations or the potential preparations for a rematch between Henry and Patricio, is that already in the back of your mind?
Absolutely. After that fight, all of us were thinking the same thing, you know, that when he fought Patricio, I think that was like a 6-day or 8-day notice. I don't know what it was, but he did really well. If you saw the exchanges, he was winning every exchange. Just made a mistake on the ground. Instead of scooting back, he kind of shot in and got caught with the guillotine. But I don't think that's going to happen this time around. Again, I think that was when we just kind of moved out here. And so there was hardly any preparation. We just kind of went with what we had. But the fighter that Henry is now, I think we match up so well against him. And so we're definitely campaigning for that title shot.
I think it's safe to say you're one of the people out there that's rooting against Patricio versus Chandler.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, we want Benson to go against Chandler. You know, we got Benson at 55, and we want to keep Patricio down at 45 for Henry. So
I don't know if this has kind of been a discussion with the team, but it, you know, it came out after the fact of what Henry weighed on weigh-in day, and you know, the California Commission trying to you know, mentioning about maybe he shouldn't be fighting at 45. Is that something that you just have to kind of talk to the California Commission and about where the future is for Henry?
I mean, I don't know. We have mixed emotions about that. Like, I understand what they're trying to do, but to say you have to weigh a certain amount after you made that weight, you know, he wasn't struggling to make that weight. I think we only cut like 3 pounds or 2 pounds in the morning. And so it wasn't a tough cut for us, but most guys that cut weight, you're going to put on about 8 pounds within the first hour and a half just off fluids, you know, just hydrating with fluids and eating fruits and so forth. That's already 8 pounds. So for them to say we got to be, you know, 15 pounds over, 14 pounds after we weigh in, it's just not practical. You know, we weigh in at 9 o'clock in the morning, we hydrate, say 11:30, 12 o'clock, we're already 8 to 10 pounds in. And then we're going to eat a dinner, we're going to eat another late night dinner, wake up for breakfast, and we're constantly hydrating. You know, I forgot what a gallon weighs, but I think that's 8 pounds, right? So if we hydrate 2 gallons plus a gallon in the morning, that right there is already 24 pounds. And so you would think that they want us to hydrate a little bit more. And the whole reason is for safety factor. Then let us hydrate and let us eat as much as possible, and we can stay healthy. When they're not hydrated is where you really can't take punches and going down in weight class and stuff like that. But Henry's always fought at 45. It's not been a problem for any other state besides California. So, I mean, it's unfortunate California has those rules. Like, I know a lot of people are against it, and it kind of deters people from wanting to fight in California. And so I don't know really what the problem is there. We weigh this the day before, and who cares what we weigh the day after.
As always, Eddie, man, I truly appreciate time, as always, man. Where can everybody follow you out on Twitter and, of course, the gym?
The gym, we are at the MMA Lab in Phoenix or Glendale, Arizona. I don't have a Twitter, unfortunately. I'm really not good at social media, but I do have Instagram. It's just Eddie_Chaw, so you can find me there.
Bellator 215 is going to take place next Friday night, of course, from the Mohegan Sun up in Connecticut. Now joined by one of the men that's going to be part of the main card, live on the Paramount Network, also streaming live on DAZN. It's Logan Sorley. Logan, man, I appreciate time. How's things been?
They've been good, just getting ready for this fight and enjoying the Florida sun and just getting ready.
As a fellow Florida resident, yes, we love this time of the year when we're not bundled up. But next week you're going to have to get bundled up, but not inside the cage. Of course, everything's going great for you, 4-0 in Bellator. How would you assess your performances inside the Bellator cage?
They've went well. The last fight was a good performance, and I went out there and dominated the fight from the start to the finish, and it was good to get another TKO underneath my belt and improved to 9-0. So I was happy with that performance and, looking forward to continuing the momentum into February 15th.
Are you the kind of athlete, whether we're talking about your wrestling or now in MMA, where when you go back and you look at your performances, obviously you're happy you won, but you kind of go back and maybe try to, nitpick some things that you think you could have done better?
I think you have to do that. I had those two fights in a row where I didn't get a finish, and I was a little disappointed. I couldn't get to certain situations, but you have to do that. If you just get complacent and happy with every little victory, you kind of lose a step, but you become okay with, not getting a finish and not performing at your highest level that you can.
Your opponent here, Ian Pascual, he's been up and down inside the Bellator cage. Loses to Ed Ruth and coming off that loss against Lorenz Larkin. As you kind of got this fight and you and your team looked into his fighting abilities, was there something that stuck out to you about maybe why this could be a unique challenge?
I think he's got good wrestling. He's got good wrestling, good grappler, and he's really hard to finish. Ed nor Lorenz. Ed had him kind of in trouble, a little bit in that second or third round of that fight when he got on top and hit him with some good shots. But, he fought hard till the end, and he didn't make it easy for those guys to dominate, And the Larkin fight, it was Lorenz kind of stayed on the outside and kind of picked them apart a little bit on the feet and was hard to take down. But it wasn't an easy fight for either of them. So, for me, the biggest thing is it'll be interesting to see if he wants to wrestle and grapple with me or if he wants to throw bombs. So either way, I'm ready for it and we're excited.
Do you honestly think he'd want to wrestle with you?
He wrestled Ed Ruth. He took Ed down once and he clinched Ed on the cage a couple times. And so I think that, that's where he comes from, and when you get into a fight, you go back to what you've known. And so, I won't be surprised at all if, he shoots on me and clinches and tries to take it to the ground and goes where he's comfortable.
The analogy we always hear in the fight game is the next fight is the toughest fight of your career. Why would you say this is the toughest fight of your career?
I would say it's the toughest because, he does present a tough guy to finish, and he's got good wrestling, And so compared to my previous opponents, when I fought in Penn State, I fought a tough BJJ guy that was actually really good off his back. So he made things tough. But, the other ones have kind of been strikers or not great wrestlers, and so he's a good wrestler, and so that's why this one's interesting.
Is there anything you want to prove to yourself in this fight?
I want to prove that I can go out there and finish him. You know, something that Ed nor Larkin could do. So for me, I would really like to go out there and prove that, you know, I can put this guy away, and I can, you know, my pressure and ground and pound will get to him. So that's my biggest thing for this fight, is proving my superior wrestling and ground and pound from the top, and that, you know, I'm getting better every time I step in there.
Would you say pressure is the number one key to victory for you?
Yeah, I would say lots of pressure and lots of little angles and little situations in the wrestling and wrestling to striking and constant movement, you know, things like that are the big keys, not standing straight in front of them, you know. So there's all kinds of little things that go into every fight against different guys, and, you know, he's a tough guy and he's got good wrestling and hits hard.
Speaking about those little situations, is that, you know, a big part of your training camp is kind of working on, you know, just these little things that can come up in fights, and you know, maybe it's a bad situation, how you work out of it, and if it's a good position, how you maintain that position?
Yeah, you know, I work with some of the best guys in the business, and every, you know, once you get into training camp, we really break down little situations, and they put the right guys with me that are going to get me to that point where I need to be for when it happens in the fight. You know, if he stands up 5-6 times, being able to mat return him, if he gets in on a takedown, be able to defend it and go back to striking, back to wrestling into a dominant position. You know, there's little situations like that we spend a lot of time with every week, and we change it up and continue to just build, you know, build from that first camp I've had down here, you know, nearly 2 years ago. So we always add something into the arsenal and continue to grow those strengths that I already have.
Obviously, the welterweight division is stacked in Bellator, but, you know, obviously I know you're not looking past this fight, but have you kind of mapped out what you want 2019 to be?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's just, I know it's the same boring answer, but, you know, the biggest thing is taking care of February 15th. If you don't take care of February 15th, you don't get to look forward, you know, you're moving backwards. And so for me, obviously there's a lot of tough guys and they all have fights booked. And so you pay attention to those guys. That's just, you know, natural for, as a competitor, you look at other great fighters or other great competitors in whatever sport you're in, but you take care of the guy in front of you, you know. In wrestling, it's like, you don't look ahead on the bracket. You never look ahead on the bracket. Doesn't matter what happens or what you think is going to happen until you get in there and you finish the job. And so for me, it's just finishing the job. And on February 15th, we put in a long, long, good camp in, and we've gotten better. And so we'll take care of this one. And then whatever Bellator has next and me and my agent have next, we'll take care of that one. And so obviously there's guys you keep your eye out, but what good does it do right now, you know?
And, of course, we'll be able to watch this fight come next Friday night. Bellator 215 live on the Paramount Network, also streaming live on DAZN. Of course, this will be back-to-back nights of Bellator events at the Mohegan Sun. Logan, I appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you on social media.
They can follow me on Twitter at Sorley Storm, and then on Instagram at Logan_Sorley.
And there was my conversations with Henry Corrales, Eddie Cha, and Logan Storley. Really interesting kind of hearing Eddie Cha talk about what the California Commission there should note on that is the day before that story on Henry Corrales from the California Commission with his fight day weight came out. I talked to Henry the day before, so that's why he didn't hear a question there. And, of course, Logan Storley, you know, obviously the welterweight division really is that stacked division for Bellator, and interested to see his fight next Friday night at Bellator 215. As I mentioned earlier on in the show, I will be up in Connecticut next Thursday through Sunday, as I'll be doing the MMA Report podcast on Friday. Also going to do a post-fight show for both events, so look for that on the MMAreport.com. Of course, if you're not subscribed to this podcast, please do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. Always appreciate those five-star ratings. Daniel and I really do appreciate that. But Daniel, of course, this weekend we do have a UFC event and a Bellator event. The Bellator event on Saturday kicks off the European Fight Series. Going to be headlined by Patricky Pitbull, taking on Ryan Scope. And we're recording this podcast here 9 a.m. East Coast time. And about 90 minutes from now, the Bellator press conference in Newcastle is going to be taking place. And I reached out to Bellator last week and because I had several people asking me about the broadcast details for this event. While it's not been announced, my understanding is, and I'm pretty confident in saying this is why I'm going to say it here, is that this event's going to be streamed on the Bellator app for fans here in the United States. I would imagine that would be for Canada as well, but I've got some good information on that. That's what's going to be announced today. Also, a lot of rumblings at a UK TV deal is going to be announced. But Daniel, look, when you look at this fight card, this is a fight card for the London audience. There's no doubt about that. That's what this fight card is all about. But anytime Patricky Pitbull is going to fight, sign me up for it. And by the way, this main card will start at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And really, when you look at this fight card, I mean, it's essentially it's a Bama fight card that is essentially taking place under the Bellator brand. Of course, Bama, I believe, has folded their operations. We've got Aaron Chalmers versus Corey Browning, which I call this the fight of Corey Browning being brought in for a second Bellator fight where, let's just call it what it is, he's being brought in to lose. The first time that did not work out that way as he beat Baby Slice. Also, Fabiana Edwards is on this card. We're looking forward to that matchup. 5-0. He's taking on Lee Chadwick. If you're looking for some Saturday, late afternoon May day, we've got a nice little card for you.
Man, you say this is for the London crowd. I bet the London crowd's even like, no, it's not. We don't want this. We want a good card. I mean, this card is, you're right, it's Bama. But I mean, I've seen some better Bama cards than this. I mean, Patricky sticks out like a sore thumb on this lineup. I mean, this guy's great, and I think he's going to look real good in the main event against Ryan Scope. And, the rest of the fights, I mean, Aaron Chalmers, he's a guy who, television personality apparently, but not relevant to the American audience for sure. Corey Browning, a guy who's played the role of spoiler. I think Chalmers, I guess he's going to win. I don't know. Well, I wouldn't be shocked.
Oh, that fight is set up for him to win. Let's be honest. Anything can happen. And we saw that with Corey Browning in his fight against Baby Slice. But to me, this is what I would call a showcase fight.
It is. But the problem is, I don't think Aaron Chalmers is going to contend for the lightweight title in any century. So,
No.
That's the thing is, when you have showcase fights with guys who aren't great fighters, even if the showcase opponent sucks, he can always play the role of spoiler. I mean, the guy's still going to the gym training. I mean, Fabian Edwards is the only other thing I'm looking forward to. The brother Leon. I mean, is there anything else on this card, Jason, if you're an MMA hipster, you should look forward to?
No.
not Judo Jim Wahhead?
No. I mean, I most likely will not be watching this fight card live. Hopefully it'll be available on demand because, Saturday is my grandmother's 80th birthday, so we'll be hanging out with her. But,
you know what I'll be watching live?
What's that?
US 234. I'll be watching that live.
You are going to, this is my thing about 234. There's some fights I'm down for. But in terms of the past couple of UFC pay-per-views, the $65 price tag just doesn't equal what we've seen in past. When you look at UFC 231, UFC 232, you compare those fight cards to this one, you kind of feel like, oh man, I got to pay $65. I mean, look, I love the Whitaker Gaslam fight, and Gaslam to me, in the betting terms, you hear live dog, man. That is Kevin Gastelum in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, man, he is totally a live dog. I mean, the problem is, by the way, I'm not going to spend $65 for this card. I am going to spend $65, but that's because I'm going to go to Buffalo Wild Wings and spend the the other $45 on chicken wings. But live dog, man, the odds are literally affecting my thoughts on this fight. Before looking at the odds, you know, I look at this fight, and I think, man, this is going to be a tough one, a close contest. Kelvin Gastelum has been performing at a high level. This guy hits like a truck, you know, pulling another truck. I mean, this guy hits hard. This guy's a great athlete. And when it's fight day, he performs quite well. But I still think Robert Whittaker's going to win this fight. He's so well-rounded. And then I look at the odds, and I'm like, gosh, I kind of want to pick Gastelum now because this fight's so close. When I look at the odds and see that he's a dog, you know, like at plus 200 a month, and I'm like, man, I want to be smart. I want to look smart and pick Gastelum when he pulls off the upset because I feel like it doesn't necessarily do justice how close this fight is.
Those odds as we record here on Wednesday morning, five dimes as Kelvin Gastelum at plus 205, Robert Whittaker at minus 245. I mean, look, if you take the odds out of it, if you say who do you think has the best chance to win, I think it's Robert Whittaker. But I one of the things that I wonder about is what, you know, I mean, look, Whittaker's been through some, you know, his past couple of fights. I mean, they've been, you know, tough battles for him. It is what if the gas tank maybe isn't there in the fourth and fifth round, and the gas tank is there for Kelvin Gastelum. I mean, it's kind of crazy. You think about both these guys. I mean, these were 170ers who now, you know, basically due to weight cutting, not really wanting to cut, you know, maybe not healthy wise of cutting down to 170 now here at 185. Man, I think the longer this fight goes, the more it favors Kelvin Gastelum.
I don't know. I actually disagree with you, man. I think it might favor Whittaker. Even though physically there are concerns there, I think it's not the physical part, but it's like the mental spirit of Whittaker, the heart of Whittaker that I really value heading into rounds four and five, Jason.
And speaking of the betting odds, there's another underdog line that I am surprised on. Let me see. If you've got the odds in front of you, I think you're going to know who I'm talking about.
Let me take a look at this.
There is an underdog, a slight underdog, that I'm surprised he's the underdog.
I mean, I have one guess. Is it Rolion Paiva?
No.
Who are you looking at here? Hanayaya?
Hanayaya, plus 110. Yeah. When I saw earlier this week that he was the underdog, I was surprised.
Look, he's beaten a lot more impressive names than Ricky Simon. But Ricky Simon's an exciting pick here, Jason.
Oh, Ricky's a fun guy, man. We had a great conversation last week on the podcast with him. Especially the fact of, it pretty much sounds like his fiance is basically saying, you need to cut the mullet off, which she's going to win that battle. She's going to win that battle. I told him that. I was like, Ricky, advice, happy wife, happy life.
Oh, yeah. That's who you go home to every day.
Yeah. He kind of jokes, just, yeah, I'm kind of tired of sleeping on the couch.
Well, if he beats Hanayaya, he'll be able to afford three extra beds.
Oh, look, he'll be a top 15 at 135 pounds. I mean, he'll be right there. But that line really stuck out to me. I can't say I'm shocked of how big of a favorite Israel is against Anderson. I don't know how you pick Anderson in that fight, but the craziest thing is that apparently Anderson wins. He's getting a title shot.
I mean, hell yeah, you put him in a title shot. Look, here's the thing. Old school booking, old school pro wrestling booking, you put the stars in the title fight, you know. He shows you any sense of semblance. You put Anderson Silva in a title fight, people will watch it. And people will watch Anderson Silva versus Whittaker, Anderson Silva versus Gastelum, but you got to make it somewhat sporting, and you got to give him a win here. And look, if he beats Adesanya, shoot, we got a special moment on our hands. I mean, it is so nuts. It is bananas to see Anderson Silva and the number plus 475 next to him, plus 500 next to him. Mm-hmm. This is one of the greatest fighters of all time, Jason. And he's going up in a fight where it looks like he's going to get outstruck and put to sleep.
Yeah, he is. He's the biggest underdog on this fight card. I mentioned about how I love stats. Here's a stat for you. So Sam Alvey, of course, stepping up on short notice to take on Jim Crute, be the kickoff of the main card. So this will be Sam Alvey's 17th UFC fight, Daniel. It'll mark the first time he fights on a numbered fight card, either pay-per-view or prelims.
That's a heck of a statistic too, Jason. Damn, you out here, you're like Rain Man out here looking at patterns and stuff. And yeah, I mean, I'm
okay,
sure he's on the main
okay,
card.
So when he steps into the cage on Sunday morning there in Australia, so it'll be that'll eliminate him as the record holder. Do you know who is second right now on that list? The number's 11, by the way.
Second. Oh man, I couldn't even give you a guess. I don't even know who is it. Wait, let me think about this.
So,
you got to
think about it. This would be someone who's only fought on fight night cards, been around for a while, just hasn't been able to put together a streak.
God, I don't even know. Is it
85er?
Is it Derek Brunson?
No.
Oh my gosh. Is it? Oh man. I don't even know.
When I say it, you're going to go, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Is it David Branch?
No. Trevor Smith.
Oh, man. I wouldn't. Trevor Smith wouldn't even come to my mind. Yeah, you're right. That makes sense. But
that's crazy. I mean, that to me, you talk about just crazy stats. That's a crazy stat that Sam Alvey's had 16 fights in the UFC and has never been on a numbered event.
Yeah, I mean, this guy zips and zags, man. He can piece together some impressive wins. But,
that's the thing about Sam Alvey. Like, you never know what to expect from him. Like, we've got a good idea what to expect in Gaslam Whitaker. We've got a good idea what to expect in Anderson and Israel. We got a good idea from most of the other fights on this fight card. But with Sam Alvey, you never know what you're going to get. It's one spectrum or the other. It is either he's knocking out his opponent in spectacular fashion, or he's getting knocked out, or it is a not fun fight to watch.
Yeah.
And there is no in between.
He's all over the place. I mean, he's a good interview too.
Oh yeah.
But all over the place. Yeah.
Oh, you know, Sam has already figured out who he wants to call out next. You know, he has.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing you like about him and you appreciate about him for sure.
It's probably an Australian fighter. Watch. He's probably got that. He's going to be looking for that guy in the audience.
Yeah.
Are you here?
He's a guy who's a nice addition to the UFC for sure.
I would say this. I'm interested to see Devontae Smith taking on Dong Young Mai, who
Dong Young Kim.
Well, they're calling him Mai, MA for Mastro.
It's a smart call.
Of course, last week on the podcast, Devontae tells a story about when he gets a call about this fight. He thought it was stun gun. And he was like, hey, fellas, I thought we were talking about taking smart fights. You want me to go up to 170? You're like, no. You're fighting Mastro, not stun gun.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Imagine doing the whole fight camp preparing for stun gun.
it was funny. He just talked to him last week on the show where, he's basically talking about, he's like, I really don't know who's in the lightweight division. And so we kind of did this game of, hey, how many guys can you name in the lightweight division? He's like, the guys they promote, Connor, Khabib, Nate. And he was like, Justin Gaethje, I saw someone talk about him the other day. He's like, that's about all I know.
Wow, I think he's going to fight some of those guys. I think he's going to get a win over Mai. I mean, he's looked good in the UFC for sure. I mean,
of course, a favorite here of the MMA Report podcast, Ruta Ishihara. He's a big underdog, and
yeah,
this could be the end of Taruto in the UFC.
Yeah, I think Kyungho Kong's going to take him out, man, for sure. Ruto, this is not a good fight for him. Again, I like that underdog I mentioned earlier. Raleigh and Paiva, I think he's going to beat Kai Kara France, and a nice little flyweight prospect. Don't know what being a flyweight prospect means in 2019, Jason, but, it means something, I guess, if you're a female fighter. I mean, Montana De La Rosa, I think, is going to have a good performance against Nadia Costa on the main card.
I was interested that was on the main card.
I think they look at a fighter like Montana De La Rosa, even Nadia Costa, and they say, this could be someone we will promote at flyweight.
I think initially Devontae Smith was supposed to be on the main card,
but they just couldn't find a quality opponent for him to do it,
let's put him in the feature bout on ESPN.
Look, I think that fight's more interesting to put in the main event because it's much more likely to be like a first round or second round finish and end the broadcast with momentum.
There's not a lot on the prelims that sticks out to you.
Yeah, a little bit of Lando Venetta, kind of excited about that, but. A little bit of Shane Young against Austin Arnett.
Here's my question. I wonder how, you know, because the early prelims are on UFC Fight Pass. I wonder how many people who have canceled their UFC Fight Pass account would consider re-upping just to watch those three fights.
Zero. I think zero people on the entire planet. I mean, there's like 7 billion people, but I think zero of them are like, I got to pay money to watch Uliji Buran.
I'm still, you know, I'm still surprised they haven't offered some type of discount for Fight Pass at a lower rate. You know, I was thinking about this yesterday where, like, because it came out, ESPN now has 2 million subscribers for ESPN Plus, which is double. And look, this is a credit to what the UFC has done for them. And I'm sitting there going, man, you pay $4.99 a month for Fight Pass, or excuse me, for ESPN Plus, and you look at just everything. I actually watched Ariel and the Bad Guy last week, which it's an MMA version of PTI, is about the best way I would probably describe it. It's a debate show. A good program if you want to check that out. But there's so much content, other sports content on ESPN Plus. I'm sitting there thinking about, you know, DAZN at $10 a month, which, you know, for me, I have DAZN because it gives me access to the Bellator product because I don't have cable anymore. I don't have satellite. I have YouTube TV and Paramount's not a part of it. And then, you know, you look at Fight Pass at another $10 a month, and I wonder the percentage of the hardcore fan base that has all three of those subscription services.
Oof.
25%?
I think it's just people who forgot to unsubscribe to Fight Pass.
Oh, I almost did that in January. I caught it like a day before they were going to charge my credit card.
Yeah, I mean, that's the audience for Fight Pass, just the ones who don't know how to cancel it or forgot.
You have sure. to, if you're, look, if you love to watch regional MMA, okay, there's a reason to have Fight Pass. But yeah. I'd be honest with you. I just, if I'm watching regional MMA, it's after the fact.
It's highlights. It's, yeah, you're not watching that live at all. And usually if it's worth watching, it'll end up on Twitter.
And if you follow the right people, there might be a Facebook Live video out there.
Yeah, if you're out there breaking laws like Jason Floyd.
Look, I can't help if I go through my Facebook stories and I just see someone is live streaming a regional fight. I can't help myself. What am I supposed to do? Click and get right through it?
Yeah, report it. Report it to Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg, Jason. Be ethical.
I've never done a Facebook Live video.
Maybe you should do it. Do it late at night, you know. Take the shirt off, you know.
No, people do not want to see that, man.
Get some baby oil. Do some anime pics after dark.
I used to do the Periscope thing, but yeah, I haven't. Is Periscope still a thing?
I think only whenever it's a big boxing fight. Like whenever it's a Pacquiao fight, everyone's like, all right, get to the Periscope.
Everyone's searching for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like Periscope is at this point. It is a way to watch content that you can't legally watch.
Oh yeah, I mean it had a lifespan so short, but once Periscope was invented, everyone realized, oh my god, this makes streaming so much easier. You know, you get to listen to commentary from like a family in Armenia as you watch the boxing fight on their TV.
Yeah, it's but that's the world. That's the world that all these platforms live in. I mean, it's the world they live in. I mean, look, I'm not a Fight Pass subscriber. I don't see myself re-upping for it.
No,
because I just don't. I don't, until they put an early prelim fight that I really want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think that's going to happen. I think the fights you're going to want to see are going to be either on ESPN Plus or big ESPN. Or pay-per-view.
Yeah, man. When you're in MMA promotion, you prioritize the platforms where you're going to put your top fights are. Yeah. And at the very bottom of that list is Fight Pass. And every time you're going to get the worst fights, you're not going to get something that's going to draw you to that platform, I don't think.
Let's end the podcast on this note. I saw this tweet on Tuesday night from Gerald Harris, and he goes, do you think Michael Venom Page is a top 10 welterweight? I believe so. That's my opinion. It's a hot take.
It's a hot take. He's almost there, Jason. I don't think so. I don't think he goes out there and beats Jorge Masvidal. I don't think he beats Leon Edwards. I don't think he beats. He might beat Damian Maia, to be honest with you. He might catch him.
What do you think? I think why you would say no is what happens if someone gets a hold of him and grapples him. That's the unknown with Michael Page. We don't know. And look, we're not going to see that next Saturday night. Look, there is 0.5% chance someone goes for a takedown in that fight.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if someone goes for a takedown in Daly and Page, it's because they just got rocked and they're trying to recover.
Totally.
Here's the thing. God, I can't wait to see that fight.
I can't wait. That's going to be a great fight. Page has exuded so much talent. But the reason why he's not a top 10 welterweight is this dude's three most impressive wins are over Ricky Rainey, Fernando Gonzalez, and David Rickles.
Okay, I've pulled up the UFC top 10 rankings. So number 10 challenger, Jorge Masvidal. Jorge would stand with him.
Yeah.
I can see him winning that fight.
Possibly. I think Masvidal would win, but I could see it, yeah.
Leon Edwards, would strike with him.
Yeah.
Damian Maia, yeah, Damian Maia ain't trying to strike with him. He's gonna look to get it. Yeah, and like that's the Lyman Good fight. You want to talk about just he put himself in such a bad position right from the start. Like, you're fighting Damian Maia, you cannot put your back up against the fence immediately. Like, that is what Damian Maia wants to do. Santiago Ponzinibbio, he would strike with Page. Laura would strike with him. Dos Anjos would wrestle. Thompson would strike with him. Till would strike with him. Usman would take him down. Yeah. Covington would take him down.
You think so?
Woodley would take him down, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it's that far of a hot take, though.
Maybe from a talent standpoint, but in terms of what have you done,
resume,
what is
yeah.
your record, he's not there. But from a talent standpoint, you put him in the cage against some of those guys who are going to want to trade with him, Jason?
Hey.
Possible. Absolutely possible.
But here's the thing. If he wins his next three fights...
Oh yeah.
How do you not say he's a top five welterweight? Because at that point we're talking about potentially a win over Paul Daly. His next fight would be against Douglas Lima, and then potentially in the finals, he takes on Rory McDonald, which I think Rory's going to get to the finals pretty easily. If those are his next three wins, his next three fights, got to be in top five.
I think so too, Jason. I do too. The polar opposite of what his entire career has been. It's been thrown to the wolves.
If he gets those three wins, Michael Page about to get paid.
Absolutely.
Bellator is going to have to open up that checkbook.
And then create another bank account.
Could you imagine if he wins this welterweight tournament and somehow becomes a free agent?
Oh my goodness. I can't, but it would be it would be one of the top paydays for a Bellator free agent for sure.
Oh, God. He would be the UFC. How much? Because you know the UFC would off with his fighting style. You think the UFC went want some Michael Page? You talk about just as a fighter putting yourself in a good position. Ryan Bader, he's in a good position with one fight left on his deal. Mon Moraes, one fight. I don't think Bellator's that interested. Just because I just don't know how all in they are on 135.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird. Did you see Koji Horiguchi's got a fight schedule against Ben Wynn?
I didn't see that. I thought his next fight was going to be against Caldwell.
That's what I thought too. No, April 21st, the next Ryzen show. Yeah, he's fighting Ben Wynn, the former UFC flyweight, non-title fight.
That's nuts.
So I'm sitting there going, okay, if he's fighting in April. Does that mean we're going to do Caldwell Archuleta? Now, Juan Archuleta is a free agent.
Man, Bellator's going to be spending some money, Jason.
Hey, good time to be. That's one of the things I'm hoping to talk to Scott Coker next week when I'm in Connecticut. And one of the questions I want to ask him is basically about kind of how MMA free agency is different now as opposed to say when he was running Strikeforce, and how. How different are those conversations with managers and fighters? I'd be interested to kind of hear what he would say to that.
I can't wait to hear that, Jason.
But that is next week. Daniel gets the week off from the podcast, so looking forward to I'll be freezing my ass off next week. Apparently, it's going to be snowing in Connecticut, Daniel.
Well, I'll be in Texas. I'll be warm while you're out there.
Yeah. Look, I'm staying at Mohegan, so I'm just going to get the Uber from the airport, and I probably won't leave the casino the whole time I'm there.
Sounds like my favorite, my little degenerate.
Oh, look, don't worry. I was looking at the food options at Mohegan the other night. Oof.
That was your prep?
That's pretty much my prep, yeah. What restaurants am I going to?
Exactly.
They've got a Hash House of Go-Go there. If you've never been to a Hash House of Go-Go and you're in a town that has one, you got to go.
I don't even know what that is.
Let's just say the plates are very they put a crap ton of food on your plate. That's about the best way to put it.
That's the music to my ears, man.
So that'll be so next week's podcast will come out on Friday morning. So look out for that. Also, I do plan to do a post fight show following Bellator 215 and Bellator 216. Those will be up on the MMAReport.com. We'll try to get one of the other MMA reporters that is there. So look for that. Also, be sure to head over to the MMAReport.com to check out some of my video interviews that are already up there. One of those interviews is with Andre Hall, who fights on Thursday in Pensacola, as he is going to be a part of Island Fights 52. Also, you can check out my interview with Josh Parisian, who's going to be fighting for the Lights Out heavyweight title next Saturday. Of course, I had chance to talk to him about his title fight, but also talked about his experience on being on the Ultimate Fighter. Also, I have an interview with his opponent, Brett Martin, up there. Connor Berry, got a conversation with him, talking about the little viral clip that went from his fight with Joe Gennetti. So that's all up on the MMAReport.com. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
If you're a Patriots fan, congratulations. If you're a Rams fan, I know that was somewhat painful to watch. In general, I thought the game was painful to watch. I mean, for myself, as somebody who dabbles a little bit in gambling, to have the Rams and the over, very, very painful to watch, because it was 3-0, and it was just, if you like offensive football, that wasn't the one for you. In general, the best team won. The most prepared team won. Coach McVay afterwards, in a press conference, admitted that he got grossly outcoached. He admitted it. He was like, listen, they were doing stuff we hadn't seen before. And that's what the Patriots do. The Patriots, they come with wrinkles every single week. If you give them 2 weeks, they may come with a couple of wrinkles. And if that game goes on another two quarters, I'm not sure the Rams score.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.